everyone that's joining us here in Hobart and online. It's my absolute pleasure to kick us off for day three today of what's been a fabulous conference so far, and I'm sure today won't disappoint as well. So I'd like to introduce you to what's going to be a roundtable. We're encouraging everyone to come towards the front if you're able to, just so we can have some really great discussion during this session too. And I'm going to hand over to Associate Professor Melissa Davis, who's going to be talking to us about what research competencies psychologists want and need. Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks very much, Alyssa, and good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for coming along at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning on the last day. I was worried that it might be me and the next presenters who might be at this session, but it's great to have people here in the room, and welcome to people online. So it's my pleasure to be presenting this roundtable on behalf of APAC, and in doing so, I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues, Dr. Michelle Mosier and Dr. David Glanz, who is with us, who supported this presentation. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're meeting today, the Mulwinina people and the Palawa people, and pay respects to elders past, present and emerging, and would also like to extend that respect to any Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people who may be joining us at the conference, and also to recognise the contribution of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to the very, very important work that's happening in psychology education in Australia. Let's go back to the beginnings. If we think back to 1949, Boulder, Colorado, the conference on the the scientist practitioner model was coined. And it was at this conference that the scientist practitioner model, which was conceived as a training model for postgraduate or professional psychology, that proposed that psychologists should be trained as both scientists and practitioners for three main reasons: so that they could produce research to contribute to developments in the field, I guess in that real research role. They could be consumers of research in applying relevant research findings to their practice, and be researchers in a slightly different sense in evaluating the effectiveness of their work with clients. So that's where we start off. And this was before APAC, before the CIBA, before the AQF back in 1949. So what I would like to do in this session, it's a collaborative discussion-based session that where we're going to consider the research competencies that contemporary psychologists want and need, and how these competencies might best be developed and assessed in APAC Level 3 programs. So what I'd like us to do today is to explore the requirements for programs leading to a master's degree by coursework, to identify research competencies that are important for practicing psychologists, and that's where you all come in into this, where we really want that discussion about what competencies do contemporary psychologists want and need in the context of the scientist practitioner model, and then for you to share practices and explore some opportunities in the design of research activities that are there to meet those graduate competencies, particular 3.17, so that they're valuable and meaningful for students in those Level 3 psychology programs. Okay, so professional competency 3.17 probably gives providers a lot of grief, and certainly the APAC accreditation committee spend a lot of time talking about the kinds of activities and research projects that different providers have to meet this competency. And it seems to cause some hassles. And that's the reasons why that we're presenting this session today, to have this conversation about how best to meet this competency. So 3.17 states very simply to investigate a substantive individual research question relevant to the discipline of psychology. That's all it says. There's no longer any requirements in the APAC standards about a particular percentage of a course being research. There's nothing that says it needs to be a project of this many words. etc. That's the competency. And we need to remember that it's the APAC standards, not the evidence guide, it's the standards that we need to adhere to and demonstrate that all of our students are actually meeting. So this competency aligns directly to the AQF, which you can see there talks about graduates of a master's degree by coursework will have the competencies to plan and execute a substantial research-based project, capstone experience, and or a piece of scholarship. So the AQF's been there with this version since 2013, and obviously the APAC standards that came out in 2019 are aligned directly with that requirement. But also remembering back to the origins of the scientist practitioner model, this is not a new or an unusual requirement. Now, where things get, I think, a little bit tricky is if we think about level three, those professional competencies, they can occur in kind of three main ways. Some of you may be at institutions that have all of these different versions of a level three course, or some of you may be planning some of these. And I guess a question that I'm going to invite you to discuss in a moment is what might be the wants and the needs of students that may be completing a level three program as slightly different places within their psychology training. So the most common probably level three program is a standalone Master of Professional Psychology program, and they've been around for a long time. Prior to entering a level three degree, all of those students will have graduated from a level two or equivalent. And according to the current APAC standards, what's the graduate competency? Investigate a substantive individual research question relevant to the discipline of psychology. What do you notice about that? It's the exact same wording at level two as it is as level three. So that gives us already a hint about something, perhaps. Then we may have level three programs that are packaged with a level four program. And I guess the most common of those will be a traditional Master of Clinical Psychology programs and then master's programs in other areas of practice in endorsement. So they have the same graduate competency in their level two programs as well. And then we have a new situation, which I think is really, really exciting, but also perhaps a little bit challenging, where the APAC standards offer the opportunity to package a level two or a fourth year program with a level three program. So what might be the needs of and the wants of students within those a level three program that sits alongside or is packaged with a level two program, because those students have not yet met that competency 2.5. But they can meet the same, because it's the same wording, they can meet that once within that package course. They don't need to do it twice. Sounds like there's a really interesting discussion and a few questions coming through from people online. So thank you for that. Just really like some invite some feedback about the kinds of things that you were talking about or the kinds of questions that were arising from the discussion.
Thanks. Our group, we discussed they need something feasible, a research project that's feasible within the given time frame, particularly given we all know the intensity of their clinical studies and the priority that that often takes. They want and need good supervision. Mm-hmm. And again, they often there is a disconnect between needing feasibility and wanting to do something that is not feasible within the given time frame. Mm-hmm. And they want to do a research project that is clinically relevant and has good implications. And we do have a subset who also, you know, really want it to be of a publishable quality as well.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant. Thank you. So we move to the next person. So around that, I guess if we look at those different aspects of the scientist practitioner, so some there's a little bit more focus or that focus on the research, the scientist, and something that is publishable. And then for others, or that balance, you know, is on something that's clinically meaningful for them.
I guess my comment would sort of relates to that as well, in that there's this tension for staff who want to supervise, who want to invest that time in students, but also want something out the other end for them too.
Yep.
And so balancing that with the students' desires to do certain types of research or types of questions that might not lead to recognisable outcomes for the staff to then invest all of that time. Yep. So there's a bit of goodwill for, yeah, I want to support you in doing this, but also I kind of want something too because I have personal career ambitions and all the rest of that stuff. And so it's just those tensions there makes it tricky.
Yeah, really great point.
We talked about a range of things, but I also wanted to build on that issue of many staff who are supervising students in this space are looking for some, for want of a better term, some repayment for their investment. Yeah. And it can be challenging for a number of reasons. And I think this is also that opportunity to rethink about impact. So there are really incredible opportunities, particularly for those who are looking to progress their careers, either as an early career provisional psychologist or even an early career academic, where impact and engagement with the community. So working with a community partner to do a policy, to implement and evaluate a program, these are things that are going to have real-world impact, really help the provisional psych go out and market themselves when they're going for a job, really help you craft a narrative around your contributions and community engagements, but actually help broaden the community's understanding of what a psychological scientist and a provisionally registered and then fully registered psychologist can do. So I think part of the shift perhaps we need to support our provisional psychologists to make is research is not just research articles. It is so much broader, and that issue of impact is where not only can we look at the benefits at the individual level, but also think about the community give back. Think about how you can use that to sustain and build new placements. So it's actually a way of building in some sustainability and even to the limited extent we can, economies of scale in that postgraduate space. So I think if we can support one another, and you know, some of our programs are doing this really well, so really looking at communities of practice where we can share that knowledge and share those opportunities. And then you can even get cross-state comparisons, metropolitan versus rural comparisons. It's actually limitless, but you need the headspace to think about how could I actually do this? And maybe it's even a little bit of piggybacking early on to help you establish.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for opening up that, getting us thinking outside the boxes that some of us may be constrained within.
Hi, I just wanted to build on Kim's comment with some discussions we had in our group. We talked a lot about for level three and beyond, the need for research projects which will draw on skills these provisionals will use in their working life moving forward, and that not many of them will have access to ongoing database to do things like a systematic review in their day-to-day role, but they might be working on service evaluation or policy development. So where possible, having the research project use the skills that they would need in their day-to-day job.
Not sure if this is applicable to all areas of practice endorsement, but I attended the Industrial and Organisational Psychology Conference for APS last year, and one of our members had actually broken down the required hours for our two-year master's students in terms of placements and coursework and research, and it actually exceeded the full-time course load of the 2 years that we allocate by about 50 days. So we had this discussion around, given that they've had such a research intensive 4 years leading up to this, do we need to look at scaling back the kind of demands that we place on research at that level, given they're generally very, very competent, having made it into our program in the first place in those kind of areas. So
great comment. Thank you.
Piggybacking off that, perhaps students have a need of wanting to do more clinical practice, that they've done the research and many do not continue on into academia. And indeed, the stats around who stays in that research role is quite surprising. They're not wanting that necessarily, but wanting to have the practical skills to go into the workforce and perhaps pivoting to more of that practice, so perhaps case studies, as more appropriate to meeting their needs and wants for the future.
So look, the discussion so far has been really interesting, and I just thought I'd share what we've actually started doing at CQU. So we've got an MPP and a clinical program. We now have at the level three competency level, our clinical students and our professional psych students working together in a research evaluation unit that I teach And so that unit is all about evaluating your practice or evaluation techniques. And we talk about needs assessment, feasibility analyses, and they have a choice of what their project, to, so to speak, at the end of that unit actually looks like. It's only a 6 credit point unit, so it's tiny, tiny amounts of time. This year I've got 23 students coming through that unit. We don't do individual supervision. We front end a lot of content in the first 3 or 4 weeks, so it's full on 3-hour sessions every week of me talking at them and conversation and discussion. And then they go off on their own, so to speak. I have 15-minute individual sessions that they can book in with me, that they come and talk through what they're doing. They can book as many of those as they need to. But we've really shifted that focus away from the thesis and the project and the research to where they might do a scoping review or where they might do a needs assessment. And we've set it up in that way because now our clinical students, after doing that evaluation unit in their levels, in their first year, then do a community engagement project in their second year. Now that's still a 12 credit point unit, so a double weighted unit, not as much as their thesis, and they're still not getting as much research in their degree as they were previously. But it's the tenets that Kim was talking about of actually engaging external partners. We've got some great relationships with Indigenous organisations in Central Queensland, great relationships with placement providers, great relationships that we've set up, and we can now, have students working in that kind of contextual evaluation practice space. And they see that as much more relevant to their own careers as psychologists. What we grappled with when we started all of this was, why am I doing more research? I hate research. I don't want to be doing this. And so we've spent a lot of time with our students all the way through both of their courses explaining why research is important, emphasising the relationship between the science practitioner model and evidence-based practice rather than practice-based evidence. Tanya and I were having a conversation about the difference before. And it's working so far. And even though they come to it begrudgingly, the majority of the students actually get to the end of that evaluation unit and they can see where it fits in their future career.
I'll just quickly add to that. If you are thinking about working with your external partners, in the lead up, have a discussion with your ethics committee, because you're going to actually get umbrella ethics for this. And so it suddenly also becomes a much more efficient way to conduct research, because you're not doing individual ethics applications anymore. There's already an agreed upon framework, and then you just submit the specifics each time. So there are some efficiencies there and opportunities that, again, work really nicely and can take some of those pressure points off the students and the staff when it comes to implementation.
I think we might pause at that point. That's fantastic. Thank you for the discussion that you've obviously been involved in the groups, and thanks to those who fed back some of the ideas. Hopefully, it's starting to open your mind to some things that maybe you haven't thought about at this point in time. In terms of looking externally, what research competencies do psychologists need? We should be guided by the Psychology Board of Australia. So here's the current requirements under research and evaluation, which talks about the application of critical analysis to evaluate and apply findings from scientific publications in psychology. And I guess that opens our mind to a range of skills that a psychologist would need to have to be able to do those things, and as well as to evaluate and report on interventions. So if we think about the kinds of research projects that our students may be doing in that level three, how they align to these kind of competencies. Now, moving forward, you will all be aware of the competencies for general registration that are out in a consultation presently. And you can see that these have been unpacked, I guess, and potentially expanded quite a bit. So with the focus being on applying scientific knowledge of psychology to inform safe and effective practice. So the requirements are that for generally registered psychologists, that they need to possess a knowledge of psychological concepts, constructs, theories, models, etc. They should be able to critically evaluate and appraise levels of scientific evidence. to understand the methodological foundations of various kind of scientific methods and understand their limitations and be able to use appropriate methods. Applying, I guess, a scientific, culturally informed and evidence-based approach to their psychological practice and evaluating outcomes. And they need to possess the understanding and the ability to design and conduct ethical research that's relevant in cultural and professional contexts. So there's still a diversity of competencies they're referred to. So it's certainly not saying that graduates don't need to be able to conduct research. It's absolutely saying, yes, they do need to have these skills. So let's move on to have a look at the APAC evidence guide, and just really emphasizing again to people, the APAC standards are what everyone needs to adhere to. The evidence guide is there as guidance to be able to assist people to operationalize what the standards might be looking at. The evidence guide is not the standard. So the evidence guide doesn't prescribe anything that you must do, but it provides you with some ideas and some assistance there. So according to the evidence guide, master's degree coursework requires students to be able to demonstrate the application of knowledge and skills to plan, formulate a research question and execute a research-based project that includes implementation of a structured method of inquiry, a reputable approach to data analysis and interpretation, and a critical analysis of the relevant literature. So they're the three core components. And I think that those align very nicely to the kinds of competencies that the Psychology Board of Australia is expecting of registered psychologists. So again, the APAC evidence guide sets out a range of different project types that could be used to meet those competencies. So there could be a program or a service evaluation study, and there's been a few comments around that, how that could be done with an industry partner, done in a really meaningful way that could have impact in the community. Could be a study based on an experimental single case design. And I think a few people have kind of talked about that. We see some of those things in APAC. I don't know that we see very often, if at all, a pilot study in a grant application. But you could think about how that might work in your context of your clinical or your researchers in other areas of practice endorsement, where you may do a pilot study. And, think about the benefits of students learning how to write grant applications. A systematic review, meta-analysis or structured review. And I think that's quite a common kind of research project that is being used at level three. Can be a qualitative or quantitative study using primary or secondary data analysis. A traditional empirical research project, which I think actually overlaps with that, or a capstone experience in which a question is posed and evidence is gathered to answer that question. And I don't think we really see too many capstone, I don't think we really see any capstone experiences. So what might that look like? How might that fit with what students want and need and what staff want and need? Opens up all kinds of possibilities. A really important thing that's been added to the evidence guide, so a case report will not suffice the research requirements. So what we often see is what you might see in a clinical kind of context, and I don't mean to alienate other areas of practice endorsement, just knowing that it's the clinical psychology programs that are the vast majority of the level three and four programs, where students may write a case report like you would write in clinical practice. They add a literature review to it, but then it's really like a case formulation, an assessment plan and a treatment plan. Now, that APAC is not accepting that as a research-based project. It doesn't, according to the guidelines there, it doesn't meet that requirement of research. If it's not actually research-based, using a standardised or a methodology to collect and analyse data, interpret data. So that's an important thing there. So if we remember the core features, the structured method of inquiry, the reputable approach to data analysis and interpretation, and then a critical analysis of relevant literature. That's what you need to incorporate into those projects. I will talk quickly about substantive, and then I'll invite you to discuss these different kinds of approaches and what they might look like and what they might offer. There's been quite a bit of discussion around the APAC Accreditation Committee about the word substantive, and there's been a few questions online, and chances are there may have been some discussion there about what do you mean by substantive. So let's refer to the dictionary. What does substantive mean? It means it has a basis in reality. It's meaningful, it's important, it's real, it has substance. Think broadly, I guess, around what is going to be real, meaningful, some kind of question that has some kind of substance to it. Substantive doesn't mean substantial in the sense that they have to write a 10,000-word thesis or a 5,000-word thesis or any number of words thesis. It's not about the size of the product that they produce. It's about the meaningfulness of the research question and the inquiry that goes into that to answer that research question. So, as I said, I'd invite you to either select some of these project types maybe that you're familiar with, or maybe think about some that you're not so familiar with. And for each of the ones that you choose, I'd invite you to, within your kind of groups here, to think about what might be the strengths or the advantages of a project of this kind of type, thinking about the different perspectives, what students want and need, and also staff, to consider the limitations or the challenges also within that context, the feasibility, the applicability, the authenticity, for example. And I'd love to hear, and I'm sure your colleagues would love to hear, examples of your experiences with various types of projects.
I'm going to go back to your comment about substantive and meaningfulness. Mm. Having sat on our HERIC committee for about 7 or 8 years, I would propose that all research has to be meaningful and have risks to it, benefits to it, or else you don't conduct it.
Okay, very nice.
University of Southern Queensland, we removed the thesis from our level 3 in our package program. And so there's a good, bad and ugly with doing that. We've got a new coursework that's very similar to CQU of focusing on evidence-based practice for psychologists is the title, and it goes through scientist-practitioner model, practice-based evidence. It's really about applying research to your clinical practice after you graduate. It's pretty popular, so students really like the idea of not doing a thesis, but we've really struggled to try and find out how we assess that competency, and we've settled on a capstone experience in that course, which involves a question posed of a clinical population, a complex clinical population, and students select the population and develop a project proposal of what's the best group program for that population in a health setting or an education setting. And then you do a literature review and then propose how they would assess that, what the program would look like, and any practical things that if they were in that service, what they would need to do in terms of consideration. So it's very applied. So the students really enjoy it. They complain a little bit about it, but I think that's all of their requirements. Why is this project so big? And then we're like, it's not a thesis. What? Like, but afterwards, I've had emails from students post graduation saying how helpful it was for them to be able to critically analyze literature in relation to people that they're directly working with, and then how to then share with organizations their skills as a psychological scientist.
Fabulous. Thanks so much.
Hi. I'll start with a caveat that I don't teach into postgrad at all. So all of my teaching is an undergraduate, but I teach across 3 years of the research methods and stats curriculum. And I think something that's striking me with this conversation is the disconnect between different kinds of research. And I think the disconnect between the kind of research we teach and what we equip students to do in undergraduate. And it's so academically focused. It's so science focused. Mm-hmm. And then that disconnect and then what they need to do and what's relevant and meaningful for them at postgrad level. And I feel like, you know, the work that we need to do at the undergrad curriculum is to think about a broader application or definition of what research is to make students much more likely to engage with the benefit of research. And that might overcome some of the issues that we have with them at postgrad, thinking they don't want to do research and it's too academic, it's too, you know, separate from their real practical experiences. So, yeah, that was just a thought that I had.
That's a wonderful comment. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alyssa, because really what you've said was what I was going to comment on, that if we're talking about psychological science being the foundation for psychological practice, where are we making explicit the bridge between the research method skills and how they relate to practice? Because when we're getting that feedback around how is this relevant, that actually does reflect on us as a discipline for not contextualising it. And building on Alyssa's comment, isn't this actually a really exciting opportunity to help our psychological scientists to translate and generalise their skills beyond I can write a research report to I can construct an evaluation framework, I can critically engage with literature to find a deficit. And I think maybe this is an opportunity not just to think of this as a postgrad issue, but to think of the scaffolding that leads us here, and that feeds back into those broader conversations about what do I get from a 3 or 4 year degree.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It just also took me back to yesterday's accreditation panel and thinking about what Charlotte shared as the student and about there being a desire for more of those, you know, therapeutically or clinically relevant experiences in undergrad. And this is a really kind of neat way to tie it in.
Thank you. It's more of a question for than a comment at this point. For those who have made a move away from an empirical research project to, I guess, some very, like some of the different formats, how have you found the response from staff and how have you brought them on board with that and how have you resourced it? So they're kind of pragmatic questions, but I think they're the things that get in the way.
I think Karina will start us off there. Thanks,
yeah,
Karina.
Look, happy to respond to that. The changes we made were actually in consultation and with our staff. And I guess the willingness of myself to pick up the unit in our first year clinical MPP course and go, you know what, we don't need supervisors. This is how we're going to run this. This is how we're going to manage this. And, you know, just that willingness to step outside, take a bit of a risk. And for me, it was like, look, this might not work. This might be a complete balls up. And at the end of the year, I'm going to go, right, we're going back to individual supervisors. But I guess it takes someone who is willing to champion that approach, work really closely with the professional and clinical psych teams, and have those conversations and be open to just doing things a little bit differently and setting up some really clear boundaries and expectations right at the start for the students around access to the unit coordinator, around expectations of what their project needs to look like. We don't even call it a project. We call it a review or an evaluation report or process. And so it was just being really, really careful around the terms and the terminology that we use, the boundary setting, and just making sure that everybody was on board and then thinking about how that fits into, particularly for our clinical students, what we're getting them to do in their second year. So I was probably lucky that I had the team going, yeah, all right, go for it, let's try this, with a few who were quite cynical kind of in the background going, this isn't going to work. But I guess it takes that, that someone to champion and that determination and just the conversation around this is not diminishing the research that they're doing, but actually making that argument around why this is relevant to professional practice and why we just can't keep doing things the way that we're doing because it's just not working, it's not giving us economies of scale. And if we want to bring more students through these programs, then we need to rethink how we're actually getting them developing and learning and showing those research competencies as they come through.
Sorry, another question as I'm thinking about it. So oftentimes when we sit on HERIC, we see a lot of projects that involve psychology. And if we think about psychological literacy and giving psychology away,
I think that there are opportunities for projects that are interdisciplinary, and I'm thinking particularly in education where they're running projects about anxiety and primary school age children, you know, those sorts of things. So I think there's opportunities to reach out to our colleagues in other schools.
Fantastic discussion and some really great ideas. So thank you all so much. In terms of how we might present, the students may present this research, we've already started thinking about that. So remembering, as I said, from an APAC perspective, that substantive doesn't have any word limit attached to it. It doesn't say that it has to be an individual output as such. The requirement is that students investigate an individual research question, but what that looks like, how that's presented, is not prescribed in any way, shape or form. So the thesis, I mean, we talked yesterday about, is the lecture dead? Is the thesis dead in a master's program? I don't know. But I think there's a lot of reasons why we can think more broadly about the kinds of research and then the ways in which the students will produce that research that I dare say are likely to be much more relevant to their future practice, whether that be in quite a research-focused role or in a more clinical or professional practice kind of role. So traditionally, we've all had theses. Lots of places have gone then to a manuscript, so a much smaller, rather than a 10,000-word project, for example, that may be useful for our students. Are there other things that may be more useful or as useful? Some kind of an industry project report, you know, a report that you can actually give to your industry partner or present at a forum with your community, for example, a poster, an infographic, all kinds of things. So I guess really as we wrap up, that's an invitation for you to think about not only the form of the project, the kind of research that students will do, but then how they're actually presenting that and how they're being assessed on that, to think from what's useful from a student perspective and then from a staff perspective. You know, we don't need to be marking 10,000-word theses at postgraduate level. And so we'll be doing ourselves favours as well as our students, I dare say. So really, yeah, as I've got 1 minute to conclude, the scientist practitioner model of professional psychology training is clearly still valued. It absolutely underpins the Psychology Board of Australia's competencies for registered psychologists. From an APAC perspective, there's considerable scope for conceptualising the research project within a level 3 program to help prepare graduates for contemporary work as a scientist practitioner. And I hope that the discussion has helped you realise and really think about what some of those opportunities might be. Similarly, there's also considerable scope to really reimagine the formats in which research tasks are presented to help students develop and demonstrate those skills that are relevant to their future work roles. I've just got a couple of resources there, really, around some of those methodologies. So single case experimental design, this paper by Kasdan is an excellent paper that talks about actually conducting a case study in an experimental single case design as opposed to just a case report. Melbourne Uni has a wonderful LibGuide on different kinds of reviews, and the Society for the Teaching of Psychology has some resources around potential capstone projects. So certainly on behalf of APAC, we will be very, very excited to continue to see advancements and innovation in this area, and hope that it really pushes that postgraduate psychology training, you know, into a new space where we can look at impact of the work that we're doing, not only in an academic kind of context, but for our communities and for our graduates. So thank you all so much for your participation this morning. It's been a great session.